Welcome, everybody. Burrows and Burbs 111. We're in the French Riviera, known as Côte d'Azur over there. Want to find out why 2 million French take off the entire month of August every year and head on down to the beach. I want to find out from my experts, which are this week. Let's see. I'm going to share a screen. Let's see. We've got first of all, let me say that you can find all of our podcasts at voiceamerica.com. You can see that today we're doing the South of France. Last week we did Costa Rica. We've done Aspen. We've done Palm Beach recently. So you can find all of our podcasts at voiceamerica.com. I'd like to introduce Øyvind Olstad, my good friend of the last 20 years, formerly of Christie's International. He's with us usually in Oslo, last time in Marbella, Spain. He put together this. He's my go-to. Thank you, Øyvind, for all you do. You're my go-to in Europe. And anytime somebody says, I need help in Europe, I say, call Øyvind. Somebody last week said, I need help in Portugal. I said, Øyvind probably knows the right person in Portugal. He can help you. I want to introduce also the Carlton Group. We've got Philip Weiser, the CEO of the Carlton Group today. We're going to look at one of his listings. We're going to talk to Yves Darien of RFP. When somebody finds a $25 million villa in the south of France and they want to understand taxation, they want to understand financing, they call Yves. So we're going to talk to Yves. Here we are in the French Riviera with that. I'm going to stop sharing my screen and turn it over to my partner, Roberto Cabrera. Why are you excited about today's show?
I'm excited about this because I've been all over the world. I've never been to this part of the world. And I want to understand, the geographics of it for one. I want to know how long is it from Italy to Spain? How far is that geographically? What makes Nice better than, the other towns that we are going to explore. And I just want to say, I really just want to be Øyvind.
I know. We all want to come back in another life as Øyvind. I have been to the south of France. I went as a student and I went to, Cannes and Nice. And I saw Saint-Paul-de-Vence, where Picasso painted, and Calder and all of the fabulous French artists. So I fell in love with that part of the area. But like you, I've never decided to vacation there and never considered investing there. I know that you go to St. Bart's. I know that you've gone to Tulum. But it's surprising to me that you've never considered the French Riviera. So with that, Øyvind, why did we pick the French Riviera this week? Tell us about why the French Riviera and where are you?
First of all, thank you very much, John and Roberto, for joining us here in the French Riviera, Côte d'Azur. We are in Mougins, just 20 minutes from Cannes, La Crozette, and 30 minutes from the airport in Nice. So why we are here? Because we wanted to explore the real estate market in south of France. And the best person to do that with is our friend Philip Weiser. He's just behind there. And we are at this beautiful mansion. Now I want to give the word to Philip to explain a little bit about the area and the location. And later we will hear some more about Philip himself. So, Philip.
Right. Thanks very much, Øyvind. Well, here we are in Mougins, in front of the property that we're going to talk to you from. This is a magnificent mansion house overlooking the Bay of Cannes in the distance. We are not going to do a big property tour. That's not really the aim. I just want you to get the feel of the place because it is grand and magnificent. It's late 19th century, entirely renovated by the present owners. It's a magnificent property with 10 bedrooms and about 50 acres of land around it, tennis courts, swimming pool, pool house. It's a guest house, guest accommodation and staff accommodation. So it's quite a beautiful home.
Did you say 50 acres?
Yeah.
And 50 water acres. Views.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's pretty surprising. And it's, 10 minutes at the very most from one of the most charming villages, the village of Mougins, which gives its name to the area we are located in now. It's a hilltop village, medieval, with tons of restaurants and boutiques, a very beautiful environment with little narrow paved streets and so on, so which gave this particular area its reputation. At the same time where we're now located, we're about 20 minutes at the very most from the sea in Cannes. So we're beautifully placed, half an hour at the most from the airport, international airport in Nice. And as I said, a quarter of an hour, 20 minutes from the sea and the main drag in Cannes called the Croisette. And at the same time, 10 minutes from the little village of Mougins and all the other perched hilltop villas of the immediate area. And this is a property that we recently rented to LVMH, the Louis Vuitton and a luxury goods company. They held an event here to introduce a new product to their clients from all over the world. And this is a property which we can offer for rent for holiday rentals. The owners move out. They live here much of the time. And when they rent the property, they move out. And you will see that as we go into the house, it is absolutely magnificent. Is this a good time, John, to turn the camera around and show you the way in?
Yes. I'm loving this. This looks like a lot of value. I can't believe this 50 acres and water views, and it's great style. I mean, I see these French doors. I see arched doorways. I see fabulous inlaid floors. Can I get a vineyard too? Or is that I have to buy that separately?
You could plant a vineyard.
Okay.
You don't have to buy it separately. There's enough land for a vineyard here.
Look at that door. What
unbelievable.
An awesome door. What an awesome entrance. I dare you to find me something like that in Newport Beach, right, Roberto? No way.
That's not gonna happen.
Eat your heart out, Palm Beach. This is what living
is. As you're walking through there, can you just define the geographics of what we're talking about? We're talking about essentially from the Italian border down to like Marseille or beyond?
No, not as far as Marseille. The area we're in, which is commonly called the French Riviera, the area which is most sought after, stretches from the Italian frontier up to about for us, Saint-Tropez, which is the most famous, is the area which is the most commonly known.
Right, and that distance, how far is that? Is that 100 miles of terrain or what? What is the distance from one end to the other of what you're talking about?
Right. Well, from where we are now standing, it's an hour and a quarter from the Italian frontier. Some may have heard of San Remo, where there's a music festival. That's an hour and a half from where we are standing at the moment. And if I drive an hour and a half in the other direction towards the west, then I arrive in Saint-Tropez. So you're looking at about a three-hour drive if you don't make a stop from one end of the Côte d'Azur to the other.
So you're right in the center right now.
On the way, you pass through Nice, where the airport is, through all those famous bays, even where the American Navy had a base in Cap Ferrat and Villefranche, where the water is very deep in the old days. And during the Second World War, they had a naval base there. And then on past Nice and the airport to Antibes, which is originally a Greek town and on the waterfront with a magnificent old city and defensive walls. And then on through Cannes, famous for the film festival, and through from there about another hour and a half drive to Saint-Tropez, which everybody knows, thanks to Brigitte Bardot and all the magnificent environment around Saint-Tropez and the stunning beaches. So here we are. I think if that's okay with you, you can see where we are at the moment. As I'm turning, I'm going to go into a rather traditional library and bar area.
Love the black and white floor. Love the marble mantle.
So This property was completely renovated, and they chose to leave this in its original format with the wood paneling and so on. And from here, we go into the dining room.
When was this built? originally?
In the late 1800s.
So when it was completely renovated recently, it has all of the modern conveniences. It has all the Wi-Fi and the everything.
Entirely renovated with internal sound systems, with air conditioning. I knew the property before the present owners had it. And it was in its more or less original state. It needed serious work doing to it. And the present owners, perfectionists as they are, felt that they would undertake the job to do what they have done with it. I won't bother you with the kitchen. You can well imagine it's a very modern kitchen. But I'm going to take you outside so you get a better picture of where we're actually, what it looks like from the outside. So here we have an outside dining terrace and barbecue area. This is staff accommodation I'm showing you at the moment. Place is full of olive trees. And in the distance, I don't know if you can see it from there, you've got the sea on the horizon. That's the Bay of Cannes below us there. And here you have a better idea of what the actual property itself looks like.
Beautiful. Hilltop. Beautiful grass, beautiful.
Right on the top of the hill overlooking the bay. And here are the gardens, the immediate gardens, part of the 50 acres of land. The forests behind and behind are also part of it, gives it complete privacy, of course. It's perfectly well tended, cared for, of course. The investment was very important and therefore it merits every penny they spend on it to keep it in the kind of a condition that it is today.
So Philip, that's a $25 to $28 million house, and they renovated it. How much did they invest in order to get it to the state that it's in now?
I haven't the exact figure, but I know what it was like before, and I am guessing it must have been close to $10 to $15 million.
Wow.
So let's talk about the market for such a house. And if Eve wants to jump in here, but so I was intrigued when you said it was close to the Cannes airport. So it's easy to get to from, I would imagine, from anywhere in Europe. But Americans maybe or from other continents cannot fly directly into Cannes. So do they fly into Nice? And therefore, do you get most of your interest coming from the continent?
It depends on how big your jet is. If you're flying a Boeing, you have to fly into Nice and you're half an hour away. If you fly into Cannes, you're 20 minutes away and you can fly into the smaller Cannes airport. So both are possible. It's all a question of how big your aircraft is. And yes, this kind of property is something which any well-heeled individual would love to own. It is on the market very recently because the present owners, they actually have other homes, and there are only two of them living in the house, which is 1,400. That's 14,000 square meters floor space with 10 bedrooms and bathrooms.
So is most of the interest coming from France? And it would occur to me, and I do want to hear from Eve on this, that French taxes and ownership of French property for foreigners is intimidating. And maybe it shouldn't be, but it is. It seems to be confusing and not like America. So is that a fair assessment, Eve, that mostly French look at the French Riviera as an opportunity and the rest of us are intimidated? Should we be?
Well, legal aspects of buying and owning a property in France is very different from the US. I mean, the way the type of structure you use to buy a property and all the tax aspects are pretty different. So it might look a bit difficult to understand, or you may overlook some aspects or some issues you might be facing in the future if you don't pay attention. But if you organize, if you take the right advice from the right person from the start, then you can have everything arranged pretty good, pretty well. And actually there is no big tax in France. When you buy a nice property, first you have to find it out. You use a Philip to find the right property. But once you have found it, you must study, you must consider whether you buy it in your name. If you establish a structure, a company to hold the property, what type of structure, in which country, who are going to be the owners. All these depend on your country, on the laws in your country, in the US, but it also depends on what you intend to do with the property. If you want to use it yourself, if you want to become tax resident in France, if you want to let it out, for instance, and how long you intend to keep it.
And you're part of a company called RFP, which puts a team together with an accountant, a lawyer, a real estate agent, and yourself in order to answer all the questions, the economic questions around such and legal questions around such a transaction.
Actually, our specialty is the financing.
Okay.
Most people who are buying such properties can afford paying cash. They have enough cash to pay for the property. Somebody buying a property like this, he will not take a loan. He will be able to pay cash. But in most cases, it's not in his interest to pay cash.
We're finding that we just found that in the market reports and in our previous couple shows, 65% of the deals going down in New York are cash. And we just did a market report here in Connecticut, found much the same thing, that the National Association of Realtors said that 2/3 of the deals are in cash. And a lot of the times people are doing cash because they want to compete in a multiple bid situation. They want to be most competitive. And then they seek financing after the fact, or they make a cash bid, but they've lined up somebody like yourself to get financing for them anyway. I read on your site something about bullet credit. I mean, all kinds of very special purpose vehicles.
But hang on, John. Let's talk about that. So right now we're seeing a tremendous amount of cash deals here, especially in New York and everything. And it's increasing because no one wants to pay the interest rates that we have today, right? That's one of the reasons why. And Yves, I'm just curious. You said that most of these people can pay cash, but it's not necessarily in their best interest. With interest rates so high, what do you mean by that? And what sort of rates, let's just say an American's coming over there to buy this property, would you give him 50% of the value of that property in a loan? And what sort of rate would it be?
Okay. If you pay cash for such a property in France, you have to know it will not be possible to refinance it afterwards. Either you take a loan to pay for the property, or you pay cash and you keep your cash in the property. You won't be able to refinance afterwards.
That's a rule?
First, because in Europe, it's not common that banks do that. And secondly, if you have some tax advantages buying with a loan and you refinance, you won't have these advantages anymore with a refinancing.
I don't understand that. If you own a property, that means that for the government has some level of ownership of your property, because you have a property, it's collateral. And if you go to a lending institution, you should be able to take money as a loan. They don't allow you to do that.
Well, in France, it's not common.
In continental Europe, it's not illegal.
It's not illegal.
Let me explain.
Go ahead, Philip.
Right. So what Eve is explaining to us is that if you take a loan before you actually, or while you are purchasing the property, it's registered against the property as a loan. As such, it's considered that the asset value for the government is that much less because of the loan element. You buy for 10 million. You take a 5 million loan, the government considers that your asset value is only 5 million, since the rest is a liability. Therefore, people who buy properties of this nature that take the maximum loan possible for a 25 million euro property, they could take a 20 million euro loan. The guarantee against that is not just the value of the property as you might have in a mortgage in the States, but it has collateral behind it, which is invested by the bank on behalf of the owner. So if interest are 5%, the bank expects to earn between 7 and 10% on the money which is invested with them. This pays back the interest rates on the amount of the loan and can provide a profit. But more than anything else, it diminishes the value for tax in France on the capital value of the property.
And there is a wealth tax in France, which is minimized if you have a loan on the property. And elder people might be interested in lower also some inheritance, possible inheritance tax. You know, in France, we have inheritance tax. If you have a big debt on a property, you have no inheritance tax. So loan is a way to avoid it. And some people might also want to let out a property. So they will have income and the interest of a loan are deductible from the income, which is taxable. So there are different aspects. I'm not saying it's true for all the clients, but that's why we talk to the client to find out what his project consists in, what he intends to do, what his personal profile, his wishes, and then we find out the best loan for him, if ever a loan makes sense.
And what sort of interest rates and what sort of terms would you provide as an example for an American coming to buy a $25 million?
Okay.
I think you got Roberto excited about this $25 million no. purchase.
I'm just really curious. I mean, if I got a loan for $15 million, am I paying 8%? Is it 10 years, 15 years, 30 years? Like, remember, we've gone to a bunch of places in Australia. They're like renewing their mortgages every like 2 years, right? Wasn't it like every two? I mean, that's really short.
But we won't do that in France for several reasons. First, I'll take an example of what we do usually for American people buying properties in France. Usually they want to minimize the wealth tax. So we finance 100% of the amount of the property. So the net wealth is zero. If they pass away, inheritance tax will be zero. Okay? Second aspect, some Americans, they're happy about buying a property in France, but when they do so, they also first have to pay and buy euro. And the value of the property might go up, but what about the euro? People are happy, some Americans are happy having a part of their wealth in euro. Some other will say, well, I'm not so much confident about that funny currency. I would prefer to have a low exposure to the euro. So a loan is a way to hedge that risk. And we use the loan not only as a tool for a leverage, but we use it as a way to lower tax, a way to lower a currency risk, and maybe also a way to say to make some profit. As Philip said, maybe the person is having a good fund manager in the city in Wall Street, and maybe he gets 8% return on his portfolio. So maybe he's going to be happy to pay only 4.5% or 5% on a euro loan.
I am blown away. We call that a triple play in America okay. Because you just talked about hedging my risk, right? And the currency risk and hedging my risk. You talked about lowering my taxes substantially. And then you talked about profit, actually being able to make a profit. Talk to me about the customer. Who's coming down to France? I imagine that everybody in France goes down to the Côte d'Azur in August, just like this owner, and then they rent it for the high season, right? This owner rents it for the high season and maybe occupies it in the low season. Is this a seasonal market, and is it mostly French taking an interest in these properties, or are they coming from other places?
I think that's actually my turn.
Yeah.
I'll explain that to you. A property of this specific type has a multitude of potential tenants. We rent properties of this on a yearly basis, but only as a temporary residence. These are people who have decided to come to the south of France with their families, put the kids in school here. We're surrounded by international schools which speak all languages. They get a good basic training about the French language, and they live the French, South of France lifestyle for a year, and then go back to where it is they came from. That could be for anywhere from Singapore to Connecticut. And indeed, that is the case. So that would be an annual rental. These are people with sufficient resources to be able to pay a rent of this kind. Then we have seasonal rentals. Seasonal rentals are generally from June to September. That's the high season. During that time, people tend to stay a minimum of 1 month, and some stay for the entire period, a bit like the first category that spends all year. These people have taken a small sabbatical with the children, and then they head back after the summer months and to wherever it is they came from. So the rental market is large. And then there are typically of a property of this standard in nature, the ability to offer it for rent for events, for marriages, for the kind of exhibition that LVMH held and presentation of new products. It's limitless. It's important to know, though, that the income derived from the rental obviously is earned in France. And as such, it's taxed in France. But it's taxed in a normal way. It's about 30%, like a company would be taxed. In fact, Eve would be better positioned than I to give you the exact figure. But this is relatively typical of what happens to a property like this. And it's not unlike any high-end property. 10 bedrooms is a lot of house for two people. But you could be coming for five or six people and have a very elegant house, but half the size or a quarter the size of this one.
Philip, what would that rent for if it was an annual rental, more or less, ballpark, what would the monthly rent be on an annual basis versus for short term for 3 months for the summer?
You know, I would rather give you that answer at the end because I have the tariff, but I don't have it in my hand.
Okay.
I can give that tariff to you while you're talking to somebody else. I'll check my files.
Okay, no worries.
So I want to understand the profile of the buyer. Who do you think is taking interest in these properties? It occurs to me when we're talking in luxury markets in the United States in particular, we talk about sports stars, right? They need to be very close to an airport. They have to be, you know, back at the next game, you know, or F1 stars. So you've got sports and entertainment stars, or do you have Middle East oil wealth coming in to look at mansions like this? Do you have people who need to get back to Paris and basically spend a 4-day weekend in the south of France and then basically shuttle back up to Paris to their banking jobs? I mean, that's just, a small group of three different kinds of profile. What kind of profile are we seeing? Millennials take a reintroducing the south of France to millennials? Or is this baby boomers? What kind of customer is coming down there and why?
Well, what we are looking at is, are you talking about this property? This is a very conservative mansion type property with an enormous elegance.
Right.
The younger the owners, the more inclined they are towards contemporary property. But the answer to the question remains the same. Who is buying at this price level and, of course, at much greater price levels? This is a high-end property. It is not a very high-end property. Very high-end properties here are priced between 50 and 150 million euros. So this is very much a very elegant high-end property with all the advantages it has. It is not a waterfront property. If this house had been on the waterfront, it would have been worth about 110 million, just to give you an idea. You wouldn't find one. There aren't any available. So it's a bit tricky to do anything else. At the moment, I would say that the buyers that you're looking to place are people who are of all age categories and very much the way you describe them, sports stars, cinema stars, industrialists who are mature industrialists who've been in business for many years. This is typical of the kind of property that they would buy. These are people who it's old money. It is not new money. And therefore, it has that glamour and that exclusive feel as being a mansion with history and with elegance, which is perhaps less the case for somebody who's a millennial and who wants to be more of a show-off as such and be more visible to invite other millennials to his home.
But can we talk about
these people are coming from all over the world, from Singapore, from Australia, from the United States, from, as you suggested, from the Middle East and from the Scandinavian countries, the Dutch industrialists, the beer brewers, all those who have a fortune have a home here on the south of, in the south of France. They have a somewhere else, a home elsewhere. They may well be residents of Monaco, but don't want to live in an apartment all year. And so they buy a secondary home, which they come to on the weekends. This is a very typical property of that nature.
Can we talk about, because you had talked about some people who want to be more showy, et cetera, et cetera. As you go down the coast, can you differentiate a little bit what Nice is like versus Cannes versus, you know, Saint-Tropez? Like, what are the different, like, broad strokes of what those different areas represent?
That's a really good question. Times have changed. I've been here for 40 years. There was a time when Cannes was riddled with Saudi and Kuwaiti and Qatari clients. When I first came to the south of France, they were still dressed in traditional style. The women came covered from head to foot in black. But those days are long behind us. Now these are Oxford and Cambridge graduates, people out of Harvard. They are modern, above all, when they come into Europe. They may live traditionally in the Middle East, but when they come here, they have a different view of the lifestyle. And the women are dressed normally, sometimes with their heads covered, but the men are definitely dressed in a perfectly normal style with no traditional headgear. And therefore, at that time, it was Cannes was glitz. Cannes was where the casino was if it wasn't in Monaco. Cannes was where the nightlife was. This has changed since, as the coast developed, all the areas of the coast caught up with Cannes in that respect. You can find properties like this one from one end to the other. Not so much in Saint-Tropez, which was very much a vineyard and farming area, which developed really from the 1960s onwards.
But that's got to be a problem.
Now it is very, very glamorous.
If I'm a wealthy person and I want to go to the place to see and be seen, if I go with Roberto to St. Bart's, I know I'm going to see everybody. I know P. Diddy and Mariah Carey and Joe Monta, everybody is going to be in St. Bart's during the season. But you're talking about an hour and a half of driving to get from one town to cover the entire South Côte d'Azur. So how can I see and be seen in such a spread out area?
It's your environment, your personal social environment, which will answer that question. Many people don't want to be seen at all. They come here for discretion. They come here for class and not to be seen as you might in St. Bart's. Okay. People go to St. Bart's to be seen. If you want to be seen down here, you go to the flashiest beach clubs, the flashiest nightclubs.
But you can hook me up in Ibiza?
Yeah, absolutely right. But there is a culture here. There is very little culture in Ibiza.
Okay.
There is no history in Ibiza. This is a very historic part of the world. And as you mentioned, artists from all over the world in the 16th, 17th, 18th, and 1900s used the south of France for their painting work. You see it in Manet and Picasso and in Van Gogh and all kinds of people who actually came to this area to paint because of the light. It's the light which brought the artists here.
But Philip, still, tell me the difference. What's the difference between Nice and Cannes and Saint-Tropez? What makes them different?
I can give you that answer. Nice, number one, is a small city. It has an airport, a proper airport. It has a population of about, I would guess, 600,000 people. That's a small city for the States, but it's a reasonable-sized city for anywhere else in the world. And it's not Paris, it's not Marseille, it's not Lyon. But it's nonetheless a city, and it has more air traffic than any other city outside of Paris. So it has that importance. And people like Nice for that very reason. They want a city-like environment to be in. It's got lots of parks. It's at the edge of the sea. It's got wonderful promenades along the seafront. But it is nonetheless a city with the advantages and the disadvantages of that. Cannes, on the other hand, is very much a resort town which has a season attached to it. Nice has no season. When the tourists come to Nice, they only add to the existing population. Whereas when they come to Cannes, they are really inflowing. They represent, the tourists must represent about 40%, if not 50% of the existing population. And in some cases, much more. So Cannes is, it's a high-end boutique area. It's a beautiful area to walk around. I mean, I walk in the middle of winter down the, what's called the Croisette, which is the main drag in Cannes. If I want to go to the cinema or to a restaurant, I tend from where I live to go to Cannes. So it's more of a resort environment. It's more laid back than Nice. And Saint-Tropez, since that's the one you mentioned, is very much a seaside resort with a fantastic marina. Our office is in Saint-Tropez, and it looks straight out over the Saint-Tropez marina from through the two windows. And that's our office is located in an old chateau, 17th century medieval chateau, with high ceilings and looking out over the marina. But if I go there in a month. The boutiques are closed, and they're closed all winter, and they open again around Easter. So this is very much a resort. That's a great picture you've got there of Saint-Tropez. You can almost see my office from there. And in fact, it is where those green boats were a moment ago is where the boats moor on their way across towards the peninsula of Saint-Tropez. It's on a kind of island. It's a peninsula. And my office is exactly in front of where those boats are moored. But it's in the wintertime, it's absolutely magnificent for the people who live there. There are no tourists. It's very calm. It's very laid back. It's a time of year that I love. And in the spring, of course. But the boutiques are closed. There is still, nonetheless, something I go to very regularly, and that's the Saturday market. It's a market square, an enormous market square, and people come from all over the countryside to display their wares, their vegetables, their clothing, their jewelry, their artisana. And it's a favorite for people who come from miles for that purpose. To drive to Saint-Tropez, for example, means going all the way around the bay to get to the peninsula. The boat, that can take between an hour and an hour and a half if the traffic is bad. If I take one of those green boats you saw earlier, I take it from the nearest town, which is called Saint-Maxime, and that only takes me a quarter of an hour to cross the bay.
Wow. That's a great answer, by the way. the whole narrative was fantastic.
So, Eve, if I want to spend as little cash flow, I've got $1 billion in the bank, and I've got plenty of investment to put behind it, but I want to spend as little cash flow. Can you finance a property like this that minimizes my cash flow so that I can spend as little as possible? I'm happy to put plenty of money in your bank, but I want to minimize cash flow.
First, we are completely independent. We have no ready solution from the shelf. We really start from the client situation to find out what is best. So what I'm mentioning is now some things we do for American clients. In such a situation, I could say, you have your funds, your portfolio managed in the US, you get a nice return. So I suggest you keep this in the US. We pledged a little bit of it in the US. Maybe 60% of the price of the property. We can pledge more, but 60% would be sufficient. And I can organize the financing for 100% of the purchase price.
So I can leave my portfolio intact and pledge it toward this, and you can finance 100% of Phillip's mansion.
Yes.
I'm in.
Even though those assets are still in the US?
Yes.
How exciting is this? But, I think Philip might sell two of these this week.
Yeah, but you know, for financing strategy, like for real estate, people will start looking for something when they know this something exists. So you look for such a property as Philip is presenting now, if you know that in the area on the Côte d'Azur such property exists. If you believe it doesn't exist, you won't start looking for it. With the financing, it's exactly the same. People look for this financing strategy. They believe it exists, but when they're not specialists, they might go pass by better strategies that exist, but they don't know that. So this
we're all watching A Year in Provence. We're watching Emily in Paris. We already want what you're showing us, but most of us already have our investments committed elsewhere. You just opened up the door to a whole new buyer pool who have plenty of money, but it's committed elsewhere. And you've just said, not a problem. If you like what you see on TV and in the movies, Brad Pitt, we're all reading about Brad Pitt buying a fabulous vineyard and mansion in the south of France. We all want to be like Brad Pitt. We all want that.
Okay.
And now you're going to make it happen. I love this.
Eves, so do you this in France? Do you also do this for Italian homes, for Spanish homes?
No, we just do that for France, and we do it especially on the Côte d'Azur and Paris. Okay? We do that for American. Actually, we do that for all types of international clients. Could be American, Australian, English, German, Swiss, wherever. Middle East, Far East.
All right, my next question. Forward-looking. All right, so how is the market now versus, say, COVID? What did COVID do to the market in the south of France? And what is your prediction moving forward, both, you know, to buy and hold or to buy and rent for any of these categories of, I mean, answer it any way you like. But I'd like to understand how the market has been moving. We've been talking about a lot of ultra-luxury markets going up double digits. Like Palm Beach. And I just wondered whether that pattern is repeated in the south of France.
Right. The answer to that is much more complicated than you might think. Bear in mind that the Russians were big investors in the south of France. They had unlimited funds to spend. They wrote the checks in blank so that you could put the price in if they wanted to buy the house. And they overpaid much of the property that they acquired. The result of that was that, and this is always at the high and very high end, we're not talking about a million or 2 million euros, we're talking for let's say from 12 million upwards. As a result of that, word got around. The Russians are buying, the prices are going up. And indeed they did. This was prior to COVID. And for some years prior to COVID, they inflated the prices. The Russians are no longer able to buy, as you may know, since they're being sanctioned by the world as a whole, and their property, particularly those of Russians who have had a link with the Russian government and or its leadership, are blocked in France. They have been held in escrow, if you like, by the state, while the state thinks what they're going to do with it. The European Union is in the process of discussing selling these units and giving the money to the Ukraine for rebuilding Ukraine. So the result of this is that when these houses come back on the market, they are no longer going to be anywhere near the prices that were paid for by the Russians when they bought them out of passion. The effect of that is exactly the same effect as it was when it went up. It will come down. And expensive homes of a similar nature clearly will come down as a result of that. It's what's happening next door, which is affecting the price of my house.
If I want to buy the mansion of a troubled Russian oligarch, who do I need to know? Do you know where all these troubled Russian oligarch mansions are?
Absolutely. I've been responsible for selling some of them to the Russians when they bought them years ago. And those which I didn't know are common knowledge. and that is part of our business. We are waiting for permission, in a sense, to liquidate these properties. Since the French system is very slow in getting itself sorted out, it'll take us a while to have a genuinely useful opinion from the state as to when this is likely to happen. In the meantime, prices, because you asked that question, are stable. During the COVID period, they remained stable. In fact, Eve financed one of our clients who bought his house in Saint-Tropez without even seeing it. We gave him a video tour like we've been doing with you today. We went under the house, we walked to the beach with him, we introduced him to the neighbor. He knew Saint-Tropez, but he didn't know the house, and he paid for it, he bought it. And Eve financed probably one of the most difficult financing operations possible. A person who was dealing in gold, gold bullion, which in itself is a fragile activity, but he managed to finance that operation, and we were delighted about that. So during the COVID period, there was a small boom for French people because they all wanted to get out of city centers. They all wanted to be in the countryside. So we did a lot of sales of smaller units and houses, and some of the more expensive ones, to French people who wanted to be safe and away from where the crowds were. After COVID, there was a small recuperation, let's say, of the market, and it has dipped severely in the last 9 months. We are down by about 30%, not on price, but on demand. Developers who are building new projects are down 40% on demand. So that's an indication that we are now suffering the consequences of several things. Number one, the Ukraine war, the economy as a whole, high interest rates, and overinflated prices in the past. So in answer to your last question, do I buy now, do I hang on to it and rent it? The answer is buy now while the prices are stable, because they will go up. In 40 years, I've been through many crisis periods, and I know the delay that it takes. Prices will probably go down a little, but it's not worth waiting for it, because when they pick up very suddenly. Prices tend to double after a lull by 100% in less than 10 years, generally about 5% a year. But if there's been a lull, they go up double that figure each year. Now is a good time to buy. That's not just the estate agent talking. That is the truth. The other element, of course, is, are you buying for your use to spend a week, a month, 6 months of the year, and then renting it the rest of the year, or are you buying it as an investment? They are totally different propositions. I am asked to buy investments for my clients, and I tell them, I will buy you a very, very good investment that you would never want to live in. But it'll give you a return, the kind of return I can get in Buffalo, New York, if I rent my property, but you would never want to live in it. So there is a big difference between that. Investors should turn to us for investments, and a secondary residence or somebody who's looking for a home should turn to us for that.
With all apologies to our Buffalo Bill fans who are following this.
So, Philip, how was your inventory numbers now versus like 2019? Is it lower? Is it higher?
It's slightly lower because the French are hanging on. They don't want to sell while there's a lull. They don't want to put the house on the market and let it wait for months before it sells. So they think to themselves, we'll wait and we'll put it on the market a bit later. Our inventory about at the time you were indicating to me was about 350 homes. And we're at about 310 at the moment.
Okay, and those people who are holding off from selling, they're holding off from selling because these sellers are planning on buying something else, or they're planning on leaving?
No, they're planning on buying something else. These are largely the French. The foreigners sell when they need the money, and they buy when they've got the money.
Who's replacing the Russians as a primary buyer pool? How about the Chinese? Are the Chinese, or is it oil wealth, Mideast money coming in?
No, nobody has replaced the Russians. We have lulls of these things. We used to have the expatriates coming from Hong Kong when Hong Kong went back to China. We got the Iranians when the Shah went down. We got the South Africans after apartheid. Wherever there's trouble in the world, we get people coming here to resort to peace and quiet and reinvestment of their resources. This isn't the case today. There is nobody that falls directly into that category. What's interesting, and I am not partisan because I am not in American politics, but in general, when there's a change of policy in America, a change of president, we get a big inflow of either Republicans when it's the Democrats that get in, and a big flow of Democrats when the Republicans get in. And I'm talking about a big flow. I'm talking about numbers in the tens and twenties of people who just don't want to live in the States with another party. It's fascinating. We don't have this problem in Europe. And I hope it resolves itself at some time or another in the near future.
So anyway, if I check my watch, we have about a 1 year opportunity before the next American election where I can go in and get a screaming good deal in the South of France with Philip and Eve. And after that, all my American buddies are going to come over and drive prices up.
Yes, probably. The Americans, it's still, you know, the West Coast of America to here, it's a haul when you can buy in Asia and in Hawaii and so on. But certainly from everywhere, from the Midwest across to the East Coast, this is a very big clientele for us, although we do get a lot from California as well. So the answer to the question, no, nobody's replaced the Russians, but people from every corner of the world are buying here.
Are you seeing increasing numbers of Indians?
Not at all. I promote to the Indians, they don't buy for pleasure. They only buy for investment.
Fascinating. We have about Chinese, 1 minute left.
I still never got an answer on interest rates and term of mortgage. I want to know.
Today, the curve is quite stable. You have to pay in euro between 4.5% and 5% a year, whether you borrow for 5 years or 15 years.
Five or 15, okay. I can't get 20 and 30 year notes?
No.
Okay.
For foreigners, the maximum is 15, sometimes 20.
Okay, good
that's
to know.
That's a good interest rate though.
Yeah. Oyvind, we got about 1 minute. What did you learn today?
I learned that I didn't talk at all because you had a really nice conversation. So I'm happy for that we can have this journey to France. You hear me?
Yeah. Yeah, I can hear you just fine.
I just went into the library and I found the Continental Journeys. That could be a nice. So this was a Continental Journey, wasn't it?
Yes.
So where do we go next time? Let's see.
But this is where in the world is Oyvind?
I love it. We've done Oslo and we've done Marbella, but this could be the best yet. I love this show. This was great. Keep them coming, Oyvind. You're our go-to in Europe.
Okay, thank you very much. It's my pleasure to join you everywhere.
Thank you. Parting thoughts from Philip and Eve. Philip, Eve.
Yeah.
We have 30 seconds.
Right. Well, what can I tell you? Welcome home to the south of France. Whenever you can come here, I'm available. I have a team of 50 experts in all the way across the south of France, from the Italian frontier to Saint-Tropez. We speak all the languages that one can think of under the sun, about 14 languages. And I'm at your disposal without any obligation to you and, of course, to your clients and your friends.
And if I may say something, after you have found the property with Philip, you contact us to know, to decide how you should make the strategy to buy.
Excellent. All right. I want to say thank you to you both for a great show. I'd like to say thank you to our sponsor, sharegracefarms.com, where you can get fabulous teas and coffees, all in support of their nonprofit Design for Freedom, which is all about trying to eliminate forced labor in the building materials supply chain. So you can learn more and download the PDF at designforfreedom.org and learn more about that. Thank you both. Thank you, Roberto, at New York headquarters.
Fabulous show. Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye. Bye-bye. See you soon. Bye-bye.